I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, just got about 13 minutes left in today's trading session. It is time for the Drive to the Close. Doug Scioka back with us, CEO and partner at Kavar Capital Partners. Roughly $900 million in assets under management, and they are based in Leawood, Kansas. And Doug joining us once again from there. Doug, hey, good to have you here. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Do you have Kansas? Do you have snow? Is it cold? What's going on?
It is beyond cold. It is. We are in the middle of the polar vortex. We woke up this morning. It was minus 10.
Oh, my God.
Now plus 8, so we really flipped the script. And the sun's out, which is helpful, but it's going to be with us below freezing, I think, for at least another 4 or 5 days. But we were below zero all weekend, which is crazy.
That is crazy. But you got power, right? And you're safe.
It's rolling, yeah.
It's rolling.
For the first time, I've been here 20-some years. I've never seen it happen before, but they're rolling the grids around town with some regularity. So I hope that we stay connected for the extent of this conversation.
Hey, so what does that mean, though, for you moving forward? If this is like the first time in decades that you've experienced this, I mean, does that mean that you're going to go out and buy a generator? Does it mean that you're going to make changes to your home?
Probably neither, Tim, but I might consider either if I actually owned any tools. But the reality is, this is such an outlying event that I don't think we'll make much in the way of lifestyle adjustments, you know, in anticipation of it being more regular.
But Doug, how does it make you think about climate change and the financial impact it is having, the economic impact it is having on our world? I mean, I go back a few years and people are like, climate change, it's, you know, we don't have to think about it. And increasingly, it's much more of a story that impacts all of us on an economic level and a financial level.
Yeah, I think that's a great thought, Carol. And I do think it is not inconsistent with the way a lot of information is transmitted. I mean, with its immediacy, its intensity, and then, you know, whatever we feel is appropriate, reactivity. But, you know, I think that it's so dispersed, and hopefully what we learned or what other cities and communities have learned in dealing with something like this will be something that can be leveraged in more widespread elevation of people's knowledge base and preparedness in the future. But it is undeniable that it's something that is going to have an impact on cash flows, profitability, dispersion of assets. And if you don't take it into consideration as an investor, I think it's to your own peril.
So to that end, Doug, where are you seeing opportunity in the markets right now?
Yeah, we see a lot of opportunity, Tim. I mean, I think you look at the market and hitting new highs and you know, but seemingly each day and each week. It was so funny a couple weeks ago in the 3.5% downturn in the market and the worst week since October, and really thought that might have some traction until the following week, and it was the best week since October, and then we returned an all-time high last week. And you know, we do still think that there's a lot of opportunity in certain sectors of the market if this rotation, which is certainly underway, continues to demonstrate some traction. Because we're very bullish on the economy in 2021. It's just a function of finding the appropriate assets to have that reflected in areas of the market that are not overvalued.
Well, and I know we don't normally talk specific stocks, but what about areas? Because we've spent a lot of time, Doug, talking about the small cap space. We talked about micro caps, which are really outperforming this year. Where do you see the opportunities?
Yeah, in a few areas. You know, we are big believers in that there are going to be some very permanent and positive residual impacts from the pandemic. And finding those opportunities should provide some pretty interesting and outsized return potential and opportunities. And within that intro, like, we love fintech, right? If you think of, it's really amazing, just a year ago, what percentage of all transactions were still consummated in cash in this country, right? And then you flash forward to where no one wants to touch cash of their own, no one wants to touch someone else's cash, no one's leaving their homes. And it just ushered in this incredible opportunity for digital exchange of goods and services. So that's one area. You know, healthcare and life sciences did very well as a sector last year. We think it's not even scratched the surface of its potential. You know, hopefully the hurdles to get life-saving products and formularies to market have now been permanently and positively lowered. And that's going to usher in kind of a whole new generation of interesting life sciences and biotechnology companies. And then certainly even within in emerging markets, we actually talked about this, I think, when I was on in December, and seeing EM gain prominence this year because of the labor and intellectual capital outsourcing that's taking place with no barriers, right? Because if you can't go across town, there's really no difference between going across an ocean. And we think they're going to continue to enhance margins, introduce new opportunities. The weakening dollar is a big part of that, as is sort of the demand that is pent up for the consumption of a lot of natural resources that are indigenous to certain parts of the EM world.
Are you planning for some sort of a correction here, Doug? You did say a few moments ago that, you know, the sell-off that we saw a couple of weeks ago, you thought it might have some legs. Are you expecting some sort of correction, some sort of sell-off in the near future?
I mean, I don't know, Tim, any more than we would typically be expecting such in any given year. Right? I think I saw a couple of weeks ago that the average pullback in any 12-month or calendar year is about 14.5% going back to 1980. And last year we had obviously the whopper of all pullbacks. We also had two, you know, little aftershocks, one in September, one in October. In 2019 we had none. In 2018 we had a big one in the fourth quarter. It would be hard-pressed for us to escape a drawdown, I think, this year that wouldn't be on or around that average pullback. Because the market, as I said earlier, is reasonably overvalued if you just consider the market, and that's a big part of its composition is because of the mega caps and the tech sector's preeminence. But we still think if you consider some of the other areas that have not taken place, not participated last year, there's still areas in the market that will command opportunities to put dry powder if we do get that.
What do you make, Doug, of Treasury yields up to the highest since February of 2020? Our story says that the stimulus impact still kind of getting priced into that trade. But do those higher rates, still low historically, start to get problematic anytime, or are they an indicator of something that we need to be concerned about going forward?
I think you should always be concerned. I right now think, Carol, we're in the positive aspects of what's taking place, right? Mm-hmm. If you think we've seen a lift, and we know the Fed is anchored to the front end for probably at least 18 months, maybe a little bit longer. So if we see a lift in interest rates, it's positive for three reasons. One, a steep yield curve is positive for financial services companies, which are still, you know, the key catalyst to expressing money into the economy to exhibit that multiplier effect. Two, better savings rates. We have so many clients and there's so many people out there that don't want to be forced into taking risk to earn a reasonable rate of return for a conservative allocation. And three, you get this return of constructive pricing power in the form of modest inflation. That's positive, right, for companies, particularly as we see kind of the global economy opening up and they're exhibiting and experiencing more demand for what they're selling. A little pricing power, I think, is very positive for valuations and cash flow generation.
Well, Democrats right now are trying to get other Democrats, some more moderate Democrats, on board with that $1.9 trillion spending package from the Biden administration. Doug, what do you want to see out of Washington? What's effective policy?
You know, I don't know that we'd get that much, Tim. I don't know that we need that much, particularly because I think it's logical to think there's going to be an infrastructure bill that gets introduced in the not-too-distant future after the blessing of the next pandemic stimulus plan. I think that the setup in Washington is actually pretty positive for the market and the economy in general because there is that quote-unquote beneficial gridlock. But I don't feel like any single party is going to have this clear pathway of ramrodding legislation that's super partisan. I think because of that, regulation stays reasonably low, taxes stay reasonably low, and that is, by and large, pretty positive for the economy and subsequently the market.
Hey, just got 30 seconds left here, 40 seconds. Doug, is there one place in the market you definitely don't want to be right now?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think that's a hard call to make. I mean, I think, you know, some of the speculation like that we're seeing around the SPACs and some of the cheerleaders and the short squeezes. And, you know, it was interesting back 20 years ago, right? Those FOMO instincts were hard to turn back during the dot-com years. But
right.
I just think super selectivity is really important. And ultimately, if there are no cash flows to discount and no tangible operations to assess, the whole process possesses a lot of speculation. You need to be careful.
Hey, I didn't hear you say Bitcoin.
No, sir.
Okay.
No, sir.
Nothing in that portfolio. All right. Doug Sciocca, be well, stay warm, and be safe. Chief Executive Officer, partner at Kavar Capital Partners, roughly $900 million in assets under management, on the phone from a really chilly Leawood, Kansas.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Join us on February 25th for the Bloomberg Crypto Summit. With Bitcoin reaching all-time highs, the future of digital assets has never seemed brighter. But the question remains, what will it take to push cryptocurrencies into the portfolios of the world's largest investors? Speakers include Nick Carter from Coinmetrics, Glenn Hutchins from Silver Lake, Catherine D. Wood from ARK Asset Management, and many more. Sponsored by BitGo and Grayscale Investments. Register at BloombergLive.com/crypto/radio.